From an undisclosable location for reasons of security and therefore insecurity, yes, from out of the black of the western sky comes the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Greetings, fellow travelers of time and space, and thank you for joining our little caravan to midnight, by the way, which according to the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, we're a minute closer to midnight. That's their doomsday clock. It's 5 minutes till. We were at six. So we've lost a minute. Maybe they'll move it back. They moved it from 6 to 5 back in 07, but then it went back to 6. So maybe we're good. John B. Wells with you on the bridge tonight for a program I believe that you will like. First hour, Howard Bloom. He is a longtime friend of and a frequent guest on Coast to Coast. And tonight, well, there's a rocket in the new Obama budget. Budget? I know we had a budget. Anyway, apparently we do. Maybe. Anyway, it'll kill the space program, according to Howard. It's officially called the Space Launch System, but the space community calls it the Senatorial Launch System because it's a boondoggle jobs program in disguise. A rocket that's too expensive to fly, which is why Dana Rohrabacher, Republican congressman from California, says it's the Space Titanic. Anyway, we're going to go into some detail with that, and also we will discuss the secret power behind the scenes in Syria, a hidden puppeteer that's also pulling the strings in Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, and Bahrain, the shadow force encouraging us to hit the nuclear facilities in Iran with a military strike, a hint. It's not who you may think it is. Who is it? Who is it? America says no more guns. The Greeks stock up on guns. The Greeks are thinking it may be bending their blades up pretty soon on their big fan, the big fat Greek fan. Going back to Mexico, wasn't Calderon at the ceremony when a major cartel leader was named one of Forbes' richest men in the world? Oh, well. Police seizing unhealthy lunches from elementary school children, substituting whatever the child's parent prepared for the child with that time-tested antidote to junk food. Yes, chicken nuggets. Military action increasingly likely to be taken against Iran. You know, the Persian people are a beautiful, talented, brilliant people. Their leadership should probably go. This is just my opinion. And my opinions do not necessarily reflect the views or even the permission of Premier Radio Network or your affiliate station. Anyway, that leadership is not going to go by ballot. So whoever's pulling these strings, it appears they shall have their war. Libya is melting down. And more people see Al-Qaeda as a fabrication of our own security services. A quick Ron Paul quote. I wonder about his foreign policy. I'm watching them all. But Ron did say something very, very interesting, and that is it's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. All right, well, on a more uplifting note, it's good stuff, but uplifting note. Last 3 hours, tonight we'll be with my friend and soon to be yours, William Whitecloud. He founded and teaches the Living From Greatness program, through which he coaches clients to realize their dreams by connecting with their authentic, creative spirit. He lives in Byron Bay, Australia. He's written a couple of books, which I read his first one, The Magician's Way, back in 2008. And he has a new one that's due out now. It may have been released within the last few hours, called The Last Shaman. And you'll enjoy William, and you will enjoy Howard, and they are coming up pretty quick. So prepare for 1 hour of sustained inverted flight, and then we'll flip her back over where she belongs, and we'll go from Howard Bloom to William Whitecloud. Make yourself a proper cup of tea and settle in. This is the one, the only, Coast to Coast AM. Without further ado, let us welcome to the bridge Howard Bloom. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
John, it is really good to see you because I haven't seen you in 3 years.
I know it's strange, isn't it? And you're such a clever man. You were so gracious when we first were on the air together,
Oh, I had fun. It was terrific, John. It gave me a chance to think a lot of things out loud that I would never have thought in the privacy of my own head.
Well, yeah, it won't do the rest of the world much good if they stay just inside your head. You must share. Now, what's all this about a space launch system and multi-purpose crew vehicle?
Amazing.
What is this?
It's urinating into the sky.
Perfect.
Why do I say that? Because I call it the PISS, Pork in Space System. The official name is the Space Launch System, as you told us a few seconds ago.
Pork in Space System?
That's the Space Launch System, and we call it the Senatorial Launch System because it's not brought to you by Obama, even though it's in the Obama budget. It is brought to you by a little cabal, a cabal of porkonauts, and that cabal, people who want to save jobs in their home state. Now, I don't blame them for wanting to save jobs in their home state. These are Senators Kay Bailey Hutchison in Texas, Bill Nelson in Florida, Richard Shelby in Alabama, Orrin Hatch in Utah, Barbara McCloskey in Maryland, and Ralph Hall in Texas. And all of them want to do something positive. They want to save jobs. But the result is a rocket no one can afford to fly. The result is a rocket that will take between $10,000 and $26,000 a pound, to get stuff into space. That means if we want to put you in space, John,
yes,
it will cost, wait, I worked it all out here, it's that's the SLS cost is $52 million. $52 million to get you into space.
It's a little strong.
If we want to get six of you into space, which is what this plan is all about, ultimately, if we want to build a moon base or something of the sort, it takes five launches a year, six men per launch, and it is $1.5 billion a year. On the other hand, there's another rocket. It's being built in the United States. It's being built with American ingenuity. But remember, American ingenuity includes an awful lot of immigrant ingenuity. And the guy in charge of the company is an immigrant to the United States from South Africa. And that company is able to get stuff into orbit at 1/30th the price. In other words, for the price of one launch on the Senatorial Space Vehicle, this guy is able to deliver you 30 launches. 30 launches for the price of one. Now, $56 million a year is more than even Mitt Romney can handle. That's no longer pocket change to Mitt Romney. That's 2 years of his income. And that's what it costs on the Senatorial Launch System. On the other system, it's a little over $1 million. And as a consequence, it's just three times what Mitt Romney called pocket change when he said that he only earns pocket change from his speeches. It's something that's affordable. And ultimately, we need to be able to put affordable stuff into space, because if we can do, instead of just five launches a year, if we can do, 120 launches a year, all of a sudden space becomes commercial. Up there, there is infinite energy. Up there, there is the energy of the sun. It runs seven days a week. It runs 24/7. It runs every hour of the day. There is no night up there. There are no clouds up there. And if we can focus that energy, and we can, we've been doing it ever since 1962, if we can bring that energy down to Earth, and as I said, we've been doing it for 49 years now, we can supply the needs of the most remote villages in Africa, the most remote villages in Asia, not to mention the needs and the energy needs of Baltimore, New York, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, et cetera. And all of that will be killed by the Senatorial Launch System.
Sounds more like the Sanatorium Launch System.
Well, it's... You know, the problem is not Obama. Obama brought out a space program on April 15th of last year. I was in China at that point lecturing a conference on harvesting energy, solar energy in space. Buzz Aldrin, with whom I was in contact hourly at that point, was on a plane with Obama on the way to Florida to give that speech. And in that speech, the president announced that he wanted to set aside over $1 billion for something called the Commercial Crew Program. The Commercial Crew Program is the program that encourages entrepreneurialism in space. It's the program that encourages relatively small business to get into space, to actually put things in orbit. And the result is that Elon Musk, who is the head of SpaceX, has actually put a capsule capable of carrying human beings into orbit, the first time any private company has done anything of the sort. And he's not alone. There's another company called Sierra Nevada that has an incredible vehicle called the Dream Chaser that looks very much like the space shuttle, but it can get stuff into space for a lot less money than the space shuttle. All of these programs are fed by the Commercial Crew Vehicle program, which is a very inexpensive program by NASA standards. But with the new budget, again, this is not Obama's budget. This is the budget of Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Bill Nelson, and the space cabal, the spaceport cabal. With the new budget, that Commercial Crew Vehicle program is cut in half. Why? To feed the pork in space system. Meanwhile, the pork in space system is killing our Mars programs. All of our Mars programs, with the exception of one vehicle that's on its way to Mars right now, are dead. They're gone. Two of them were commitments that we made to the European Space Agency for partnerships. Well, when America enters a partnership, if we're to be the leading country in the world, we have to be held, we have to be good for our word. If we say we're in, we have to be in all the way to success, all the way to the end. No, we are pulling out of two Mars programs with the European Space Agency. And we happen to be one of the riskiest allies on the face of the planet, because those that we ally with, we often screw in the end. And we did that with in Vietnam, when we pulled out and left a whole bunch of people to be killed mercilessly at the hands of the North Vietnamese. We did it in the 1950s when England, France, and using Israel as a tool, tried to retake the Suez Canal, and we said, stop. We said, stop. The Suez Canal was built with European money. It was run with European money. The Europeans had right to an access to access to it. It was built by the French and the British. They wanted to take it back when it was seized by Gamal Abdel Nasser. And we were the ones who told them, no, this is how you treat your allies. So it's time for us to become a little bit more reliable. It's time for us to become a little less, more responsible. It's time for us to get things into space cheaply, reliably, and fast enough to allow us to develop the resources of space, because those who tell us we're out of resources are crazy. There are resources beyond belief hanging above our heads. There are resources below us beyond belief. For every 1 pound of living matter on this planet, there are 220 million pounds. That's 220 million pounds of inanimate stuff, dead stuff, just waiting to be turned into life. And that's nothing compared to the resources above our head on the moon, on Mars, on the other planets, and even in other solar systems. This is a universe that aches for life. This is a universe that aches to be greened and gardened. And the only species on the face of this planet, we are not the smartest species on the face of the planet. Bacteria outrun us. They do it all the time. That's why we constantly develop new drugs. But the one thing we can do that bacteria can't do is get life beyond the gravity well, is to get life beyond the atmosphere, is to garden the heavens, is to garden the skies, is to garden the planets and garden the moons. And that's our job, John.
You are such a, you have such a beautiful attitude toward this, Howard. Now you're blowing a lot of information down the pipeline here. Now let me go back and just catch something real quick. You probably said it and I probably missed it. Whose baby is this boondoggle? And who can we complain?
It is basically six congressmen and senators all trying to save their jobs. You can't blame it on the Republicans because there are Democrats involved. You can't blame it on the Democrats because there are Republicans involved. It's pork, pork, pork all the way down the line.
How do we find out who they are so we can complain about it?
Yeah, it is Kay Bailey Hutchinson in Texas, who's doing a noble thing. She's trying to save the jobs of the Johnson Space Center in Houston. So is Congressman Ralph Hall, who is also from Texas, trying to save those same jobs. It is Bill Nelson from Florida. You know that a part of Florida calls itself the Space Coast because it has been so heavily involved in the space program and because so many jobs depend on the space program. So Bill Nelson from Florida is a ringleader in this. He's a Democrat. The other two are Republicans that I just mentioned. It's Richard Shelby from Alabama, because he has Marshall Space Flight Center, and Huntsville has always been the rocket center of the United States. That's where Wernher von Braun built a rocket program.
Yes.
And he's a Republican. It's Orrin Hatch, a Republican from Utah. In Utah, they manufacture solid-state rockets. They manufacture solid-fuel rockets. Solid-fuel rockets are considered passé. They are considered unreliable. Everybody in the space community wants to replace them with liquid fuel rockets, which would be less expensive by a long shot and more controllable by a long shot. But as long as Orrin Hatch and Utah are making solid rockets, they want to lock us into antique technologies. It's a company called ATK that's behind that. There's Barbara McCloskey, who's a Democrat from Maryland, who's trying to save jobs at Goddard Space Center. And Ralph Hall, we already mentioned. That's it. That's the cabal. And if you want something to really happen in space, remember the words commercial crew vehicle, because it's the commercial crew vehicle program that is going to make, that is going to bust space wide open for Americans, for Westerners, and for the world.
Howard, the Air Force had control of the space program for a while, and then it was turned over to NASA when it was formed. Do you see any way to turn this over strictly to the commercial sector? Would that, I mean, I don't know why they didn't leave it with the Air Force. They make great strides in things. I'll never understand why that happened. We did fine with NASA, but right. Can we turn the whole thing over to a commercial entity or a conglomerate?
Not yet. Here's what we need NASA for. We need NASA for these incredible acts of space exploration. We need NASA for the Webb Space Telescope that's going to replace the Hubble. I mean, the Hubble has opened the eyes of mankind. It's done incredible things for your vision and for mine. So there are certain things that NASA is required for. But we have to stop making rockets to nowhere. We have to stop making rockets that are too expensive to fly. And NASA has become such a bloated bureaucracy that every rocket that it makes costs too much. And if we go with SpaceX, if we give programs, instead of flying a rocket at a cost of a third of $1 billion, we give that money, we pay that money to SpaceX, Sierra Nevada, and the other companies that are involved in this to compete, to be the ones to fly us into space the most reliably and the most inexpensively and the most creatively. They're already competing, John. They're doing it on their own money. Elon Musk has already gotten a crew capsule into space, and he's planning within the next 3 months to get a crew capsule up there to dock with the International Space Station, something NASA hasn't been able to do. Do you know that for 5 years, America will have no access to space? In other words, no American astronaut will be able to go to space on an American vehicle. That happened the minute the space shuttle was retired. We have no vehicle that will take American astronauts into space.
So what do we do, hitch a ride with the Chinese now?
We're hitching a ride with the Russians. And do you know what the Russians think of us right now? If you read Pravda, which is Putin's organ, which is how Putin tries to rouse sentiments in his favor in Russia, he says we're not just in a Cold War between the United States. I mean, you and I thought the Cold War was over. Putin not only thinks that we're in a Cold War with Russia, he thinks it's turning into a hot war. There was a major headline 2 weeks ago in Pravda that said Obama is trying to effect regime change in Syria in order to conquer Russia. Let me repeat that verb, conquer Russia. Now, can you imagine Obama, who is pulling us out of Afghanistan and is pulling us out of Iraq, of course, with a lot of help from George Bush. George Bush set up the arrangement that allowed us to pull out of Iraq. But can you imagine Obama having a serious plan on the table to conquer Russia? But that's what Putin is telling his people. He is telling them that we are their direst enemy, and we are using their rockets and giving them $60 million a flight. We are planning to give them a total of $3 billion to get us into space while we can't get ourselves into space. That is not Obama. That's the result of the Bush space program. And it's the result of the space program that was a $60 billion nipple into the mouth of the industrial space complex. And I haven't mentioned companies like Boeing, because Boeing is in the running for the commercial crew vehicle prize as well. But Boeing and another company called Orbital Technologies, these are part of the industrial space complex. And frankly, I don't have any confidence in them being able to deliver a rocket or being able to deliver a crew capsule. It'll work. It'll absolutely work. They've shown their ability to make safe, reliable stuff, but they've shown their ability to make it at 30 times what it should cost. And Elon Musk has shown the ability to bring that price down to what it should really be. He's an American hero.
Give me a 30-second answer as to why does the ship keep sailing in the same direction regardless of which side is in office?
Because the bureaucracy is humongous, and everybody wants to keep his or her job. Its space is regarded by many people in it as a jobs program, and it gives them cushy, overpaid jobs that unfortunately make the cost of what we do unbearable.
Oh boy! Well, the increase in federal employees now, it's just rolling into this giant snowball. It's turning into an avalanche. I wonder what will happen if the number of federal employees, and bless each and every one of you for having a job, then I mean this, but where are we politically when there are so many federal employees that they're never going to vote against any kind of cuts in any federal department?
Well, John, since we talked, I wrote a book called The Genius of the Beast. The Genius of the Beast says the Western system is brilliant. It's doubled the lifetime of all of us within 150 years, given us two lifetimes for the price of one. No other system has ever done that. But
gotcha.
It works on a balance. And it's a balance between government, private industry, and something I call the protest industry.
All right. We'll be back with Howard Bloom here. And just hang on. They're going to chop us off. We'll be back with Howard Bloom, and we will carry on Coast to Coast AM. Sorry to chop on you like that, Howard. I couldn't help it. Can we take to redirect this money for space and stay away from the Russians? And what if there's gold on the moon? Who gets it? Who regulates it? How can we get some of it? And not only that, who's really pulling the strings in the Middle East? We're with Howard Bloom tonight, and we'll be right back. Just stand by for 2 minutes. We're going to get into that right here on Coast to Coast AM. Howard Bloom. Clear me up on something here. I was picking on Mr. Bush pretty bad last weekend. But didn't President Obama pull the plug on that? Is President Bush getting the blame for the loss of transport to the space station?
No, what's really happening is that Obama is getting the blame for Bush's policies. Bush was conned into something called the Constellation Program. The Constellation Program was the original pork in space system. It was hideously expensive, and it was sucking all the oxygen out of the room at NASA. It was forcing program after program to be killed at NASA. And it also, in its plan, John, this is very hard to believe, in the formal plan for the Constellation system, there existed a five-year gap in which Americans would have no access on American vehicles to space. Now, when Obama reversed this program, he said he pulled the plug on the Constellation program, and he directed large amounts of money toward the Commercial Crew Vehicle program, the program that fosters private enterprise in space and inexpensive, reliable rockets. But then the biggest campaign of big lies I have, I've been involved in politics since I was a teenager and worked on my first two political campaigns, and I have never seen the lie machinery work the way I saw it work after that April 15th speech, where Buzz Aldrin was standing by the president and I was in touch with Buzz because we agreed with what the president was saying. He was taking money out of socialized space and Stalinist space, and he was giving it to private industry. Well, guess who didn't like that? The space industrial complex.
How bad?
The same people who bring you weapons, planes that used to cost $15 million a piece now cost $145 million a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a rule of war, and it's very important to be aware of it here. That rule is, if you've just invented the machine gun, John, and I am your bullet supplier, and I am charging you $60 a bullet, how many days do you think you'll be able to use your machine gun?
Yes.
If on the other hand, you go to my competitor, and my competitor is able to sell you bullets for $1 a piece, because this is precisely the ratio between the Space Launch System and the Dragon capsule from SpaceX, 60 to 1. So if my competitor is able to sell you bullets for $1 a piece, do you think you'll be able to last through a battle? Could you last through a battle at $60 a bullet?
No. You'd have to be real careful with those sites.
And this is a war. And here's how the war goes. I mean, it's a creative war right now. It's a cold war right now. But here's how the war goes. Iran, a year and a half ago, put up a space probe. It carried a turtle. It carried a bunch of bugs. But it was a space probe. Iran, 2 weeks ago, put up a space probe. Did you read about it?
No.
Well, what else can a rocket that can put up a space probe, what else can it be used for?
Just about anything you want.
An intercontinental ballistic missile is what it's called.
Absolutely.
It can be used to deliver nuclear warheads to New York, to Houston, to Washington, wherever you want. Now, there's another rule of military success. One rule is your weapons have to be good. reliable, high quality, and cheap, or you can't afford to go to war.
Well, I think there's a good reason why we have the United States Air Force Space Command.
There is, but they're very expensive, too. Now, here's the deal. Julius Caesar almost never lost a battle. He was remarkable for his ability to win battle after battle after battle. And in his press releases back home to Rome to build his reputation, he tried to get across, which were later turned into a book, he tried to get across a simple message over and over again. He who controls the high ground wins. Now, the fact is that Iran has had a space program for a long time. It's not yet capable of getting something into low Earth orbit, but it's reaching that point. And any rocket that can get things into low Earth orbit, as I said, can reach Washington, New York, Los Angeles, or Houston. Meanwhile, we know that Iran is working on nuclear weapons. They started working on them in the 90s. In the 90s, they financed the father of the nuclear, of what's called the Islamic bomb in Pakistan, the man who gave Pakistan nuclear weapons by 1998. That program was financed in its first 5 years by Iran. Now, you only finance a program in a foreign country if you get the technology. And one of the pieces of technology was a 30-inch in diameter or circumference, I can never remember, but it's a small nuclear device that is designed to be a warhead. So Iran has been working on a warhead, a compact nuclear warhead, for much longer than the press lets you know. Much, much longer.
Well, while we're on this subject, so what do you think? It appears that there was a thing in one of Daily Mail. One of them had a one of the UK papers said a rather high ranking admiral says we're ready. But do you see action with the Iran as inevitable?
It all depends on the secret force in the Middle East. There's a secret war going on in the Middle East. You're not supposed to know about it. It's a war basically between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia represents the old guard and represents the Sunnis, who are the majority in Islam. Iran represents the Shiites. And these two have been at war with each other for a long time. The Saudi Arabians already felt a year ago, long before the Arab Spring, that they were being encircled and outmaneuvered. They knew that Iran had two proxy armies in Iraq, and that Iran was using the United States to topple Saddam Hussein so that Iran could take over Iraq. And by the way, Iran declared victory 2 weeks ago. Brigadier General Qassem Soleimani, who's in charge of all of their overseas proxy armies, declared victory in two countries. He declared victory in Iraq when we left, and he declared victory in Lebanon. Meanwhile, they have another proxy army in Gaza. It's called Hamas. They control Hezbollah in Lebanon. And this made the Saudis feel as if they were being encircled, and they sent out desperate pleas saying that Islam was about to be destroyed. What they meant is Sunni Islam was about to be destroyed because they regard the Shiites as devil worshippers for all practical purposes. And at that point, they had the Saudis were not alone. They had an ally. It was called Egypt. And the two of them felt isolated and surrounded. Now Egypt is gone. How do you think that makes Saudi Arabia feel? Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia has been cultivating connections in our State Department. They're not just connections. It works like this. John, you go to work in the State Department. I, a Saudi representative, come to your office, and all I do is say how glad I am to see you, and if you need anything, always call on me, etc. But you know that there is a secret message to my meeting with you. You know that if you play my game, the Saudi game, if you do things the way I tell you to, the way Saudis tell you to, when you leave office, I will never pass a check to you while you are in office. I will never bribe you. But when you leave office, I will make sure you become a very wealthy man. Now, that is the deal that everyone in the State Department knows he has got. And as a consequence, people in the State Department do not work for you and me. To a large extent, yes, they work for you and me because they're patriotic Americans and they're people of good heart. But they also work for the Saudis, and they know it. And the Saudi power in the United States is totally covered. 3 years ago, I was asked to do my first appearance on Iranian television. I've been on Iranian global television 6 times now, and on Saudi television once. And they asked me to appear on the Israel lobby. So I did some research, and I made a shocking discovery that for every man, woman, and child in the United States, the Israel lobby spends a penny per year. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but there are a lot of Americans, and when you add that up, that is a lot of money.
Okay.
How much do you suspect the Islam lobby spends? Remember, there are 57 Islamic countries, 1.6 billion Muslims.
Never, ever heard any data on it.
No, they don't want you to hear any data on it. Well, Saudi Arabia alone, for every penny that the Israel lobby spends $13.26. Now, if you walk into a candy store with a penny, John, how much can you buy?
Penny's worth.
which is nothing these days.
Right.
If you walk in with $13.27.
Oh, enough to cause tooth decay, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Washington is a candy store.
Mm.
Avenue K, where all the lobbyists are, know that. That's why companies spend hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying in Washington. This government has a great tendency to belong not to you and me, but to the corporatocracy. But it also belongs to the foreign powers who are able to spend enough money. It turns out that as the figures that I did that led to that $13.27 for every penny the Israel lobby spends, those figures are 3 years old, and there are new figures. I first heard them from an Egyptian novelist living in Cairo. And the new figures are Saudi Arabia has spent a cumulative total since 1948, not of $70 billion, to win over the world, to establish madrasas in countries like Mexico, the United States, Canada, Japan, South Korea, madrasas. You know, those schools that train kids in how to be terrorists, basically, that give them a terrorist ideology from the time they're little. So they spend this money on madrasas. They spend this money to put into to buy positions in Middle Eastern studies departments at Harvard, Princeton, at universities in Texas, universities in California, so that if you want an opinion from an expert on what's going on in the Middle East, you get it from somebody who's bought and paid for by the Saudis. It turns out the figure that the Saudis have spent since 1948 is not $70 billion, which was the figure I was working from 3 years ago when I was first on Iranian TV. And remember, they invite me back. It's $87 billion. And that's just one out of 57 Islamic countries. So Saudi Arabia is in a secret war right now with Iran. Now, you've watched and seen the Arab Spring. We were all cheering. We were all rooting, including me, on Coast to Coast, for the Arab Spring revolution, right? We wanted to see freedom and democracy. We wanted to see our brethren in the Middle East be able to breathe the same kind of clear, free air that we are and be able to express their opinions without being afraid that their throats would be slit. Well, nobody's bothered to cover what's been happening since the Arab Spring. In Egypt, Egypt now has a majority, two majority parties. One of them is the Muslim Brotherhood. The first rule, the Muslim Brotherhood has a founding document, and it says the first rule of Islam is jihad. And they do not mean some sort of spiritual struggle within yourself.
Right.
It's just the opposite. And that they're considered the moderate party, because then we have the real militants, the real Islamic militants, and they won a big slice in parliament in Egypt, too. Meanwhile, Libya has crumbled into a nightmare. It's militia against militia. No one is safe. They were better off under Gaddafi, and Gaddafi was a monster. But monsters at least keep places safe. In Tunisia, Tunisia has also gone to the Islamists, to the radicals. And we've forgotten about this. So we wonder, I mean, a person like me wonders, why are we cheering so heavily for the Syrian revolutionaries, and why do we cite figures from them every day and call them the opposition without ever asking who the opposition is? Do you know why we do that, John?
Tell me.
The Saudis. The Saudis need a revolution.
Do you think they're going to make it, Howard? Do you think the Saudis are going to prevail in this? Because I'll go out on the clothesline and tell you what I think is going to happen. I don't mean to be an alarmist here. We're going to war. We're going to war with those people. And we got Hezbollah all over the border.
On the brink of that, that's certainly what that is what the Russians are calling for. The Russians are calling for a military alliance that includes the Iranians, the Russians, and the Chinese. That's the beginning of World War III.
Sounds like it to me. And let us not forget that there are lots of reports of Hezbollah elements all along the U.S. border at the south.
And Hezbollah is another Iranian puppet.
And they're serious people.
It's one of Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani's proxy armies. And, yes, they want to make more than mischief for the United States. They believe that Western civilization is about to fall and that the world, the entire world, is about to be taken over by Islam. Because that's what's in the Quran and that's what's in the Hadith. Muhammad was promised the world.
I know you have to be a little bit careful, and I should probably be a little more careful. But how do you see this crinkling out, Howard? I mean, really?
Well, I think we need, the big question is, what do we need to do here? And what we really need, I just came from a dinner, John, with a friend named Ghanem Nusabe. Ghanem Nusabe is from one of the biggest, most important families in the Arab world. In, was roughly, I get my dates wrong, but it was roughly 653 AD when the Muslim armies marched into Jerusalem. They put the Nusabe family in charge of the Holy Sepulchre. Ghanem's father is the foreign minister, was the foreign minister of Jordan. Ghanem spends his time with the royal families in Qatar and the royal families in Dubai. And one of my biggest fans is the senior consultant to, or the senior assistant to, the prime minister of the United Arab Emirates, and runs Dubai's real estate holdings. So I have a following of all the strange things. I'm a Jewish Zionist atheist, and I have a following in the Islamic world. And what were Ghanem and I talking about? How to empower moderate Muslims who do not have a voice in their world and whose throats will be slit if they lift their voices. How to put together a project between Dubai and Israel to harvest solar power in space and transmit it down to Earth so we don't need to have any more energy wars. So it's an end to $4 a gallon gasoline, so other countries do not have us by the throat, and so the oil companies do not own the American government. And right now, the oil companies, I hate to sound strident, but the oil companies do own the American government. And it is a shame and a monstrosity. And that's why one of the reasons the Saudis are able to be so silent and yet be able to move our entire foreign policy, because the oil companies consider themselves to be the Saudi representatives in the United States. They do not consider themselves to be representatives of you and me.
Howard, we're just about out of time here, but would you mind giving, I'm not sure that very many people even know what a Zionist is.
A Zionist means, well, here's how I learned it when I was 5 years old. A Zionist is a person who's in favor of an Israeli homeland in the original homeland of the Jews, which is Israel. Israel actually, historically, was the Arabs took that territory from us. Lots of imperialists have taken that territory from us. The Romans did it. The Persians did it. It's been done over and over again. The Assyrians did it. And we've tried to get it back. It's a tiny little slice of territory. It's about the size of Long Island. That's all we want. And we want to be able to live there as a Jewish state, the way that Americans live in an American state, the French live in a French state, the Saudis live in a Saudi state, etc. And that's it. But the dream that I was taught when I was 4 years old was we were going to take this terrible malarial land. It was a land of malaria-inducing swamps and of deserts. It was almost useless. It had almost no people in it. We were going to take the deserts and the swamps and turn them into gardens, using modern technology, and then we were going to show that modern technology to our closest brethren, the Arabs, to whom we are very closely related genetically, so they could garden and bloom the rest of the Middle East, all those vast wastelands where people are impoverished for no reason whatsoever. And when I was in Israel back in the 1960s, I watched the ultimate horror. Behind me in Israel, everything was green and rich, and giant machines were harvesting, just one man in a giant machine was harvesting acre after acre after acre of crops. On the other side, it looked like a desert. It was a desert. And one guy with a plow handle that he'd made from twigs, from a branch, was struggling with a donkey to plow a tiny strip of land 20 feet wide by 80 feet deep. That was it. That was his whole wealth. And do you know what was flying overhead, John? This is the real atrocity. Overhead was flying a $15 million fighter jet that his, because he was in Syria, and this was a $15 million fighter jet that his country's leader had wasted money on instead of giving him a tractor. If his country's leader had spent that money on tractors for his people, they too in Syria, the Arabs too, would have been rich. And the goal of Zionism, as I understand it, is to make the Arabs as wealthy as can be.
Howard, it is always a pleasure to speak with you. I want you to come back on the program as soon as you possibly can.
Thanks, John. I enjoyed it. I really enjoy being with you.
Take care. HowardBloom.net or BigBangTango.net. Take your pick. Keep up with Howard. Now, when we return, William Whitecloud will show us the difference between the magician's way and our way. has nothing to do with sorcery. This is Coast to Coast AM.